Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me today for my talk about how product leaders can stay relevant and never go out of style. Before we jump into that, my name is Anant Vasishta. I wanted to quickly thank Product School for putting this together and also giving me an opportunity to speak with you today. Of course, by this point, you've had a full day of speakers, some great presentations, and lots of lessons you're kind of taking away with you. And I want to end the day for you with key principles and behaviors that are going to be relevant to your product career, both now and in the future. Of course, I can't be there in person with you today, so I'd love for you guys to comment as we go along so we can kind of have an engaging discussion throughout the entirety of the talk. Sounds good? Cool. Who's heard this phrase before? What got you here won't get you there, right? So whether you're a product leader working at a large corporation or at a startup, you typically think about, you know, taking on new skills and new behaviors as you go along, effectively shedding the old and learning the new. Which is, I think, a perfect and great, and I think that's all good things to do as you kind of increase your scope and responsibilities. But what I want to focus on today is around five key principles and behaviors that I believe never go out of style. So product leaders can reuse this and repurpose these over and over again as you progress in your careers. So a little bit about me. I've been in 15 plus years in the product game, if you will, currently at Facebook. Previously, I was at Amazon and Boeing, as well as some startups. I've done work around consumer products, enterprise products, software products, and hardware products, kind of the whole gamut, all the permutations, if you will. Currently in social media, but previously in digital retail, aerospace and defense, education, and also clinical research. On the side, I mentor and coach a lot of product leaders who are early in the career, and I'm also a startup advisor. I'll share with you some of my journey today and pick out some examples and some counterexamples to just like make the point and kind of showcase what I'm trying to talk about. But of course, as with anything, your results may vary as our journeys will be inherently different. So let's talk about things that do go out of style. Right, so fashion and other trends typically go out of style. So for in my world, for example, in the 90s, I used to wear baggy jeans, which were great back then, and everybody I knew were wearing them. Of course, if I was to try to do that today, it would be a pretty tough sell. Of course, 90s, trends are coming back, so there's probably some wiggle room there. But I think the idea here is that trends come and go, and there's always a new way of doing things, and that ends up being the old way of doing things. And so if you think about some of the 90s websites from design perspective, or even the ones from the early 2000s with the Web 2.0, you wouldn't implement the same things today. And similarly, management strategies change over time because new research comes out, new learnings are kind of considered in the equation, and we kind of grow from there. But I would like to for you guys to think about how leaders don't go out of style, especially the best known iconic leaders stay relevant. And so I would like to posit that great product leaders anchor themselves on a few key principles and behaviors, and they kind of build this well of these principles and behaviors that they dip into over and over again throughout the course of their career. And so the first one, and you will start off with some controversy here, the first one is being patient. So growing up, you probably heard about good things come to those who wait. It's a common idiom, common phrase, and it's all about, you know, waiting and being patient for things to go how you expect them to go. But the best product leaders are actually very proactive. And so if you think about how you be impatient with the details, right? So whether it's at the feature level, the content level, just kind of get into nitty gritty. But you can also be impatient about the broader perspective, like when it comes to strategy and where things are going. So when you think about the team and organizational level, you want to look for opportunities to improve performance. When you have like a great team members within your team who are all individually placed for the roles that they're part of, they can actually do a lot more than you can do by yourself, and you need to be there for every single decision. when you think about users and customers, you want to think about innovating on their behalf, right? So if you kind of embody the users' like impatience with how things are going, their pain points, that'll really help you think about how to develop breakthrough solutions for them. And so, real quick tangent, impatience, and by what I mean by that isn't about just flipping tables and being disruptive all the time. It's not about pivoting in the name of constant improvement. It's actually a little bit different than that. So when you think about Keanu and you think about his interviews that he does, he's extremely quiet and very deliberate about taking his time. But when he speaks, he drops knowledge. And so the idea here isn't so much about constantly flipping around and changing and pivoting things. It's more about doing the hard thinking, critical thinking, and looking for opportunities to effectively challenge the status quo. And that's how you want to kind of approach this. And so in my experience, when I was at Boeing, we were working on a new program to deploy drones, robots effectively, for aerial ones and ground ones to help people in uniform get information and transport some of their equipment. Which makes a lot of sense. From a controlling standpoint, we had a big control, computer box, effectively like a big mega laptop, to control all these drones. You can do it in one place at one time. But the problem there was this big computer box costed millions of dollars. So while the concept made sense to keep things simple, have like one controller to control all these drones, I thought to myself, there's probably a better way to do this. It's probably, we can probably do a lot more with a lot less. And if we make it cost effective, we could probably give it to a lot more people in uniform. And so I kind of raised my hand and talked to leadership about this, and I pitched them this idea that, hey, I think there's other ways to do this, and I gave them some options, but they were not convinced, right? They did not agree with this proposal. They said, here's where we're going, and you just have to kind of come on board. So what I did was I took the same pitch, and it went to a completely different organization within the company, focused on research, and it pitched them the exact same thing. And if you kind of think about how you would pitch like a VC or an investor, that's exactly what I did. And from them, I secured some seed money, effectively some research funding. And then I went ahead and recruited two engineers to kind of join me on my journey. And over the course of a few months, we effectively built a real prototype using a ruggedized kind of tablet-like equipment with running Android on it, and all the kind of capabilities that we could probably think about to just like prototype this concept. And what we did at the end of this was we took it to a defense conference where we kind of showcased this just to kind of get some feedback. And lo and behold, the people in uniform actually loved this because it was super familiar to them. It was more like how they use devices at home. And it also did 50%, if not more than, of the same capabilities of this big monolithic thing that we're building as the official kind of program of record. And so you want to think about how you want to embody challenge the status quo. You want to also kind of think about how to change things when they don't make sense to you. With the second piece here, we're talking about starting with the end. And so folks often get stuck in the day-to-day and getting lost in your own little world, and you get into this notion of if you build it, they will come. But the best product leaders look for the quarter ahead, if not the year or two ahead. They're looking above and beyond what you would be thinking about from a day-to-week, from a day-to-day perspective and a week-to-week perspective. And so when you think about the team and org level, people want to know where are we going and why are we on this journey with you. And it's not just about having a North Star, although that's really good to have. It's more about having a strategy that you're operating towards, right? So when you kind of think about the customers and the market, you want to start with the ideal solutions to their problem. And there's concepts such as customer development that help you do this. But the idea is to kind of figure out what the end state is, what does really solving the problem look like, and build to get there. Of course, pivots are okay, right? You can revise your approach as you go along, as you learn new things. And so it's about having an end state and taking different ways to kind of get to the same spot. And so you want to ask yourself questions around what does good look like? What does better than good look like, and also what does great look like, right? So these are questions you want to kind of constantly ask yourself as you go along. And Airbnb actually uses this concept called 11-star experience, right? So there's a 10-star experience, which is like really good, but then they kind of push themselves forward with this 11-star experience concept to really imagine what does a great solution look like, because then you can now focus on kind of going through the journey to kind of get there. And who do this really well? Athletes do this extremely well. And they actually might be the greatest at it, right? So athletes do a really good job of this process called visioning, where they picture themselves, you know, winning the championship trophy, you know, at the end of the season, at the end of the playoffs. And once they have that clarity in mind, the end vision in mind, the rest of it just becomes a journey. It's about the practices and the games to kind of get there, and they know where the end destination is. And so for me, at my startup BrowseMob, we kind of learned this the hard way, right? So it's like a counterexample. We started off solving supply chain and logistics problems. So think about trucks and distribution and all that sort of thing. But we actually ended up wound up building a platform for people to get deals for on apparel products. And for retailers, this was great too, because they could smoothen out their pricing curve. So you know, we started from like one end of the spectrum and went to the completely different side of that spectrum. And this took us many years to get there. But when you kind of, when I reflect back, it just didn't have to be that way, right? We got caught up for the longest time in kind of in this build mode, you know, build for the sake of building without really asking where we wanted to be. And so product leaders not only need to develop and keep this end state in mind, you have to also think about the teams that are coming with you on the journey, right? We had a tough time kind of keeping the morale going as we constantly changed our approaches because we didn't have a clear end state in mind. So we could have gotten there a lot quicker had we done that up front. And so number three here is kind of building on the same theme, but oftentimes we kind of get stuck in what I call tunnel vision, right? So, you know, we focus on things we have direct control over, or maybe we built a few products and championed a few products, and so they become our babies, and then we don't want to do anything about them. We want to just, like, let them continue to operate. But the best leaders kind of connect the dots and are really doing what we call systems thinking. So if you kind of think about systems, you're a system, the products and a portfolio of products that you're building are systems, the organization you're part of is another system, and of course the market and like the end users are part of the system as well. And these are all dynamic moving pieces, so you kind of get into this world of system of systems kind of a behavior and kind of notion, but the ideal state is to actually pull together these different pieces together to build solutions. And so if you think about how do I connect the dots and how do the systems thinking to connect the few features and products and solutions I have to build this long-lasting solutions, you can think about them being durable over a long period of time. And so Jobs is known for a lot of different things, and in my opinion, his best aspect was threading the needle. So he was really good at bringing together various, you know, seemingly unmatched products and features together to create an ecosystem and an experience for everyone. And this wasn't just the end user, it was also for the teams who were working along with this vision to be able to actually build the right thing. So it wasn't just the iPhone or the apps ecosystem or the Mac ecosystem as separate, disparate things. It was the interconnectedness and the interoperability of them all so that there was no hard stop or cliffs from an end user standpoint. There was no dead ends, and the users could kind of float between them from here to there. And this kind of still is exhibited today with a lot of the products from Apple. And so in my experience, you know, we just launched Amazon Business to kind of basically bring Amazon for business customers, just like we'd had for multiple years. And so we started off with some of the basic capabilities for buying, but which made sense. But when you think about it, businesses are really different. So you and I may buy a printer cartridge, but businesses will probably buy hundreds of them for all their printers. You and I may buy singles. Businesses will get pallets and truckloads. And so clearly different orders of magnitude that we were talking about. So while we had the initial pieces, we had a procurement in, system integration, we had pricing and shipping, of course, there were definitely a lot of hard stops and cliffs along the way where people, business customers would get stuck because they couldn't truly execute everything that they wanted to do as part of their workflow. And so what we did was we started focusing on connecting all the dots together. So we started focusing on not just the features, but how do we tie together all these features together into real full solutions? And so if you look at the Amazon Business offering today, you'll see a wide range of capabilities working together to simplify procurement, whether you're a single, sole proprietor or in an organization with multiple employees. And so you want to think about how do I, mishmash these different things together to actually create the solution that people are looking for. And this helps your team also understand how they play a role in all of this. The next piece here is around mind melding, right? That's the fourth piece here. So if you're a Star Trek fan, you probably are very familiar with the Vulcan mind meld. It's about thoughts and experiences and memories and knowledge that's shared between two individuals. Of course, humans don't have this capability, but the best product leaders actually practice this really effectively. So it's not just about communications, although that's a big part of this. It's about building relationships, your trust, alignment, empathy, and even shared values, right, between people. And when you kind of think about the entire organization that you're part of, you want to think about synergy, right? How does the combined effect, how do you make the combined effect far greater than what you would be able to do on your own as a product leader? And so when you do this really well, you can overcome setbacks. You can kind of lead organization through various changes that they're going through. You can make a hard pivot to save your company, your startup. And these kind of like really tough things not only become possible, but they kind of become a little bit more straightforward and easy when you've done this process of mind melding and making sure that you and the rest of the organization you're part of are on the same page, not just from a communication standpoint, but kind of build that trust and empathy. And so the most effective leaders actually operate on two aspects of this, right? First is they focus on understanding from the other person or set of people. Then they focus on being understood. You know, I've seen this happen multiple times where, you know, product leaders kind of get caught up in trying to try really hard to get their points across. And what they don't do or they forget to do is actually hear the team out. And sometimes, you know, it could be even worse. They actually may not hear the customer who's actually sharing their pain point or disagreement. And so if you don't know where the other party is, how will you actually meet them or even meet them halfway, right? And the other side of this equation is being equally understood. So I've also seen product leaders make this mistake where they kind of come in, drop their document, their slide deck or vision statement, and just assume that people know exactly what's going on and what they mean by that. But this is going to be a recipe for disaster, because if you haven't taken the time to actually get them to understand what you're trying to say, it'll cause a lot of churn. And sometimes you'll end up doing the exact same thing you should have done in the first place, but you'll do so over a period of weeks and months, and it really causes a lot of disruption amongst team members. And so reflecting back on my experience when I was responsible for the Amazon bestsellers as part of this broader portfolio of products, you know, the bestseller stuff was working great. I was chugging along, you know, on your top left here, people were finding it useful. They would frequent this page and make decisions on what to purchase. But then, you know, in the team, we had this hypothesis about, hey, it might be a good idea to know what the bestseller is when you're actually looking at the product detail page, which is when you're going to make the final decision to actually add something to your cart, right? You know, some people get caught up in analysis paralysis. And so kind of took this concept, took it to a VP in this completely different part of the organization, and they were focused on the detail page and a few other things, but we got a lot of pushback. You know, I got a lot of pushback about, hey, we've done this in a certain way. The detail page is super important, which it is, right? Because it makes the final add to cart decision, and we don't want to, like, you know, add new things to it when everything's working just well. And so what I did is I took that feedback, tried to understand where they're coming from. I wrote up docs on trying to, you know, showcase what their feedback is and also providing our perspective on the same concepts. And at the same time, I spent a lot of time building relationships, earning their trust. And at the end of the day, the kicker to this was actually bringing in the data. So during this kind of long multi-month debate that we were having, at the team level, we actually ran some experiments within search results to just quickly understand from a data standpoint whether people do in fact appreciate having this information at their being available to them. When you look at search results, and what we found out was that people actually love these, right? They love knowing what's the bestseller, especially when they're looking at multiple products and they weren't sure about it. And so we brought, you know, all the documents back, the relationships and the trust that we already had, and added the data factor to it to fully kind of communicate where we were coming from in addition to understanding where they were coming from. So eventually we were able to test this and we launched this. Now it's across the website in all the other spots. And there's a bunch of follow-ups that have happened since then in terms of the Amazon Choice Label and a few other things. So just like ways to think about how do you kind of get on the same page as another organization just so you can make sure that you first hear them out, but then also, of course, go back with them with how you want to be understood. And the last thing here, if you take nothing away from this presentation, it should be this one, which is be humble and be curious, right? So the best product leaders understand that they don't know everything, and that's perfectly fine. It's totally okay. The idea here is to hire the people who are really great at their roles. And sometimes these folks will be better than the product leaders, right? They might be better than you in a certain aspect, and that's totally perfectly fine. The idea is to recognize that you don't understand everything, and you probably never will, but it's also about being curious about learning something that you don't understand. So you kind of go in there with the assumption that you really need to kind of pay attention and learn through the cycle. And so when you look at this quote from Notorious B.I.G., it kind of resonates with the idea of being humble. So if you treat everything like it's your first project, you kind of come at it with a sense of curiosity, a sense of humility, and even a sense of hunger, because you're coming at it with a fresh perspective and a fresh set of eyes. And so this applies to how you relate to your team and organization, and because you're serving them as a product leader, and so you want to always be humble in terms of how you approach them. It also applies to how you build products and grow your business. Right. If you kind of take this approach of how do I provide solutions for the market, for the end users, you can think about being humble and taking a different perspective. And so in my experience, you kind of think about these different solutions from the delivery tech organization within Amazon, you know, lockers at the stores, lockers at the apartment complexes, but also in-home delivery, in-car delivery, using all these devices and Internet of Things. And they've only been around for a couple of years, right? So these are relatively new pieces of solving for the solution, but they're extremely useful and solve some real problems for real people. And so when I joined this organization, the delivery tech organization, the first thing I did, even though I knew how to get packages, and even I've been getting packages for a long time, I went on what you call ride-alongs. Effectively, you hop on board with a delivery agent and you kind of spend a day and understand how things work from their perspective. So I did this in the Bay Area in California. I also did this in Delhi in India, because I want to kind of get a feel for the whole spectrum of how things may be working. And you start then the day early in the morning. You come in at the delivery kind of regional distribution centers, look at how all the shipments are coming in, and then you kind of follow along for the routing process, and of course with the delivery agents when they go out to like residential places or commercial places to deliver them, which is a really tough thing to do because it's a long day. There's a lot of packages you have to handle. Similarly, I also spent time doing in-field research and customer interviews locally to understand how people deal with packages, right? Whether it's residential, like, you know, regular customers, or even the people who manage the mailroom. And so when you kind of take these approaches of understanding, you know, whether you've always been receiving packages and you may want to actually understand a little bit better, you're out in the sun, sweating, delivering these packages, that gives you a newfound appreciation for how the process is working, or maybe potentially how it's not working so well. Similarly, when you're kind of experiencing the frustrations of a messy mailroom, you kind of start understanding how property managers kind of deal with this problem as well. So it's about putting yourself in the shoes and understanding something that you may not have fully understood or may have kind of cursorily browsed over. So it's just not just about the end results. It's about building an end-to-end solution where you're kind of solving for problems along the way. And when you do that across the entire spectrum, that could truly change the game. And so I want to quickly wrap up here and summarize. Great product leaders definitely anchor themselves on a few key principles and behaviors, and they kind of build this well, which they can dip into over and over again. And these five key principles and behaviors on the screen here, I truly believe will never go out of style. So product leaders can reuse and repurpose these over and over again as you progress in your careers. And you can also tweak them as you go along, as you learn, increase your scope and increase your responsibilities. And before I wrap up, I want to quickly call out a request for feedback. I would love to hear from you and learn from you. So if you go to this website, myname.com/productschool, there's a survey that I'm hoping you can take, and so I can learn from you and understand how you found this to be helpful for you. With that, I want to say thank you and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.